As we've been studying in life with God, there's one particular subject that I think is really fundamental to us to study as a subject if we're going to understand life in the kingdom. And oddly enough, it's not that odd, but it's the topic of joy. And it might feel odd to talk about joy on a day when a lot of sorrow has been mentioned in prayer requests, but if you listen and you pay attention, you're going to find an integral connection between joy and sorrow. And I hope I can do it in such a way that it kind of illuminates how we can be joyful in times of sorrow. Because I really firmly believe this. Unless you understand that God is the most joyful being in the universe, you will not understand God. And I hope that you'll give this topic some serious consideration. We're going to focus on one passage of one psalm. It's in Psalm 118. It's verse 24. You probably all know it. I'm pretty sure you do. Psalm 118, verse 24 says, "This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." This is a day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And when I think about this particular psalm, I think about a particular event that happened many, many years ago in my life with the kids. I might have mentioned this to you before. If I have, just throw me some grace. That's what we are as Primitive Baptists. But, you know, years ago, I used to bathe my kids all together. It was kind of a time-saving device. And at the time, we had Olivia, and we had Julia, and we had Joshua. And Olivia was up, and she was already heading towards bed. Joshua was in the rinse cycle. And I was trying to dry off Julia. But Julia's doing this thing. We don't know where she got it from. It's not like she bumped her head or anything. But it was called the da-di-da dance. Da-di-da-di-da-day dance. And it was where Julia would literally, I mean, she was about 3 years old at the time, and she would throw her hands up and she'd just go, da, 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 dee, da, around in a circle. And I was kind of irritated at the moment. And I said, "Julia, hurry." And Julia goes, "Da, dee, da, 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 da." And I said, "No, Julia, that's not what I mean. I mean, stop with the dee-da-day stuff and get over here so I can dry you off. Come on, hurry." And she looked at me, and with those big old brown saucer eyes, she asked me a very profound question. She says, "Why?" And I'm like, And it kind of just stopped me in my tracks. And so I got Joshua, I scooped him out of the tub, and I did the dee-da-day dance with Julia. And it made me realize afterwards, and I am still afflicted with this, that I spend a lot of my life waiting to live. And we have a choice as we follow God that we can spend our life waiting to live, or we can actually live. There's a wonderful theologian. His name is G.K. Chesterton. And he's written on this topic of joy. And he says something about God that I'd like to read to you in just a second. But he writes about it in his book on orthodoxy. And he talks about how, you know, in this concept of God, you really can't understand the concept of God unless you understand the concept of joy. And I was just, I read that this week, and I want to tell you, I want to share with you something, and I'll talk about it a little bit later in the sermon. But I started to apply this sermon to my life as I was developing this sermon. It's like, okay, let me apply the principles of the things I'm saying into my own life. And I want to share something with you. It really, really, really made a difference. And so if you'll give me your attention, I hope I can give you a tool to be able to use in the life of the kingdom, because what I'm about to say to you is out of the Bible. So it's good stuff. When that moment came with Julia and she looked at me and she said, "Why?" I had no answer, because I didn't have anything to do. I didn't have anywhere to go. I didn't have any tasks that I had needed to be done. I had just gotten so addicted to hurry and rush. I was so preoccupied with my little agenda that here was an invitation for joy right in front of me. And I was blind. I was just blind. You know, here's the thing. The dee-da-day dance doesn't last forever with kids. Just gone, just like that. Then they're off to college. Then they're dating Philistines. I don't like it. And you know, like I said, you know, I spend a lot of my life between living and waiting to live. I spend a whole lot of my time waiting to live, standing in line, trying to get through meetings. That's waiting to live. I spend a lot of my time worrying about stuff. That's waiting to live. I spend a lot of my time getting angry about stuff that's happened or has happened to me in the past. And that's waiting to live. I waste a lot of time. And I tell you, Maria told me something towards the end of my term in DeKalb County. She said something to me that I will never forget. And it kind of shook me. And I resolved that I was not going to stay in this place. But she's looking at me because I was under a lot of stress. And she said, "John, when's it going to be over?" And I said, "Well, you know, if I can just get past a week from Thursday, you know, the trial will be over. The investigation is going to come. If I can just get past a week from Thursday." And she looked at me and she says, "You've been waiting for a week from Thursday for years. It's always a week from Thursday." And I'm like, "Whoa, you're right." I've been spending my life as a week from Thursday, and I don't want anybody in this church to spend their life waiting on a week from Thursday, because with Julia, at least at the age of 3, she wasn't waiting on a week from Thursday. She was in this day. She was in this moment, for this is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And when she was getting a bath, that was a D-Day moment. When she was getting dried off, that was D-Day. And after she was dried off, that'd be another D-Day moment. For her, life was just a series of D-Day moments, and God was actually teaching me about the concept of joy at that time. This is the day. God's plan for your life is joy. Joy is at the heart of God, who God is. And if you get nothing else, get this. Joy is at the heart of God. And we're never fully going to understand God if we don't understand that about Him. Now, I talked about G.K. Chesterton in his book, In Orthodoxy. This is what he writes. He says, look, and I can identify with it, because if those of y'all that have had children, you know, like when we got The Little Mermaid, Olivia, when that was her first movie that she watched from Disney, and she would watch that movie over and over and over and over and over, and it was just as fresh the 18th time as it was the first time we watched it. All of you that have kids have gone through that. It's that monotony that just wants you to just like this. But kids can enjoy monotony, and I didn't really understand it until I read this passage. It said, because children have bounding vitality, because they are in spirit, fierce and free, therefore they want things repeated and unchanged. They always say, do it again, and the grown-up person does it again until he's nearly dead, for grown-up people are not strong enough to exult in monotony. But perhaps God is strong enough to exult in monotony. It is possible that God says to the sun every morning, do it again, and to the moon every evening, do it again. And it may not be automatic necessity that all daisies are made alike. It may be that God makes every daisy separately, but has never grown tired of making them. It may be that He has the eternal appetite for infancy, and here it is. For we have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we. I think that's one of the greatest lines I've ever read. For we have sinned and grown old, and our Father is younger than we. Thank the Lord He exalts in monotony, because let me tell you about John. When God looks down at John, forgive him. Forgive him again. Forgive him again. And before I leave this church building, God's going to say, forgive him again. God exalts in monotony, and that's just cool. You know, I was thinking, you know, they have all these kinds of specialized Bibles now. You've probably been to the bookstore or something, and they've got the policeman's Bible, the firefighter's Bible, the soldier's Bible. I've always thought in my head, I kind of like to write the teenage Bible. You know. And in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And on the first day, God created the light. And He was like, let there be light. And there was like light. And God said, sweet. Now, as an exercise in contrast, I want y'all to think about this. Think about if, because we could write another Bible. We could write the Bible of the middle-aged man. In the beginning, God had to get up and fill out a requisition request. And that was exhausting. And He said, it'll have to do. And on the next day, God created the light. It was okay. And it was enough. And then He said, it'll have to do. And on the next day, He separated for the sea from the land and made all the land flat and functional, like Texas. And at the end of the day, He said, it'll have to do. And on the next day, he created the pigeon to fly in the air and the carp to swim in the sea and the cat that creepeth upon the ground. And he could have made a million other things, but quite frankly, the thought was very exhausting. So he said, you know what? I'm not even that thrilled with the cat. And this will just have to do. Imagine. Imagine if God was a joyless God. But he's not. At the heart of God. At the heart of God, you know, he's not. And on the fifth day, it didn't come up where God said, thank me, it's Friday, and I get to quit. This God that we serve is a supremely joyful God. Now, of course, in Genesis, it looks nothing like this. Genesis just throbs with this refrain. God spoke, and it was so, and it was good. And on the first day, God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. And that first day was a Dida day. And God did a little dance. And the next day, God said to the light, do it again. And the light did it again. And God danced once again. And it has gone on for every day from the beginning of creation down to the day that you were born and down to this day. And so it is with God. For we have sinned, though, and grown old, and our Father is younger than we. And you will not understand this that about God until you understand this, that God is the happiest being in the universe. Now, I want to say this, too, because God knows sorrow. The Bible says in Isaiah 53:3, it says he was a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, talking about Jesus. But let me talk to you about the sorrow of God. Like the anger of God, it is the temporary response to a fallen world. The temporary response to a fallen world. Make no mistake about it. God's eternal destination is joy. The sorrow of God, temporary response to a fallen world. This comes out of Psalm 19, verse 5. God's intent was that his creation would actually mirror the joy that he has. Psalm 19, verse 5 is talking about the sun, and listen about how he talks about the sun. The sun, which is as a bridegroom coming out of his chamber and rejoices as a strong man to run a race. Guys, this is not picturesque language. This is creation expressing God's unwearying joy. It's simply just being. It's just existing. And knowing existence is good. And that as products of his creation, made in his image, we are supposed to mirror the joy of God. You know, one of the things about Jesus, and we see this over in John 15, after teaching on obedience and that famous refrain about abiding me, Jesus teaches about obedience. He says, I want you to love one another. And he says, I say these things to you so that you can have my joy and that your joy will be full. Well, you don't say those kinds of things unless you're absolutely known as a happy, joyful person. You just don't. Can you imagine, y'all have read Winnie the Pooh. Can you imagine Eeyore? I'm saying these things so you can have my joy and that your joy may be full. No, we don't want Eeyore joy. Jesus was known as a happy person. That's why people love being around him. So Jesus' joy, he wants us to have his joy. Not just any kind of joy, but Jesus' joy. Now, you know, Jesus, happy person. When I would watch Julia do that Dida Day dance, there was hardly anything in the world that could really, at that moment, make me any happier. And I want my children to live lives filled with joy, not in a selfish way, not in a superficial way, but I want them to be servants. I want them to be good. I want them to be focused on loving other people, just like Jesus wants for us. But I want them to dance, too. Lewis Smedes, he's a theologian. He says, to miss out on joy is to miss out on the reason of your existence. C.S. Lewis said this one time. He said, joy is the serious business of heaven. Apostle Paul writes to us in Philippians 4:4, rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say rejoice. I got to ask the question, man. How much damage, and this is just kind of a rhetorical question, but how much damage have joyless Christians done to the cause of Christ? How much damage have joyless Christians done to the primitive Baptist? I mean, you can teach grace in a way that is offensive. Or you can teach grace in a way that's joyful.
I had no hope, except Jesus just, the Lord just scooping me down and choosing me for no reason and anything on my point. Nothing about me at all. But it's about joy. Now, I can't make myself joyful, but I can abide in a God who is a joyful being. And one of the ways that I can abide in a God who is a joyful being is kind of make it kind of a discipline, kind of an attitude. You know, we get the word holiday from the word holy day. Because you know that the days of celebration, all those feast days that were in the Old Testament were designed to help people kind of connect the dots. God, joy, stuff. And so you see these kind of interesting passages in the Old Testament connect the dots, you know. And it harkens back to the book of James where he says, every good and every perfect gift is from above. Everything that makes you go, wow. Everything that makes you go, sweet, is from God. And cometh down, from every good and perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights. And the idea of this kind of discipline of celebration, these feast days, is part of why there's so much Old Testament emphasis in the Old Testament placed on them. Now dig this from Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 26. Word of the Lord, Deuteronomy. Lots of instructions about celebrating feast. Deuteronomy 14, 26. And thou shalt bestow thy money for whatsoever thy soul lusteth after. For oxen, for sheep, for wine, for strong drink. For whatsoever thy soul desireth, thou shalt eat there before the Lord thy God, and thou shalt rejoice, thou and thine house. Now, this is not a license for substance abuse and destroying your life. But I got to tell you, this is a passage that really hasn't been preached in some churches of dear friends of mine. You know, take your money and buy wine and strong drink and essentially have a party. Just joy. It's joy. And the Lord says over and over in the instructions on the feast days, you know, connect it to me, connect it to me, connect it to me. Not a license for substance abuse, but it's an indication of the extent to which we need training for joy. You get that? We need training for joy because joylessness is a sin. It's kind of quite serious sin. I want y'all to, if you want to, you can go over to Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 9, because Nehemiah at one time said to a group of grieving people, this day is holy to the Lord your God. Do not mourn or weep. There's a time for mourning and weeping, but not this day. Not this day. They're going to be about the discipline of celebrating. Go your way and eat the fat. I love that. No South Beach diet in the Old Testament. Go your way and eat the fat and drink the sweet. And send the portions unto them who for whom nothing is prepared. Connect in joy and a generous spirit. Brother Tom mentioned about Thanksgiving coming up. Enjoy your Thanksgiving. But remember the poor. You know, Mama, there are sometimes Mama, and it's shocking, would make a dish or two that wasn't my favorite. And I wouldn't eat it. And Mom said, there are starving children in China. And I would volunteer. Send it to them. Enjoy your food, but share with them that don't have it. Enjoy it. You don't have to sit there and be melancholy about, you know, because I tell you, if you really think about the sin of this world and in the profession of prosecution, I can tell you can be overwhelmed. I was I got invited to this cable access show. And it's just a step above Wayne's World. So I mean, literally. So I was like on TV Tuesday night or something like that. And it was, I mean, it was a very joyful person that was doing it. But she's like, well, what do you do? And I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And I was sugarcoating it. I wasn't going deep into it. And her face was like that. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm at the tip of the iceberg about some of the stuff I see. We live in a world that is wrecked by sin, but it is possible Because right now, some thinking people are sitting there thinking, thoughtful people are saying, how can I be joyful in a world that's full of sorrow and shame? There's that movie, What About Bob? And Bob is in the bedroom and he's sleeping with that little kid, and the little kid's just obsessed with death. And all he can think about is death. But Bob, in his kind of goofy way, just brings this joyful attitude to him. And the kid's like, well, you know, once you were dying, we're all going to die. I'm 12 and I'm going to die. I mean, what else is to be scared of? And Bob gets a silly grin on his face and teaches him about Tourette's. So the rest of this movie, this kid is just like, oh, I've got Tourette's. And it's just kind of a joyful thing. But we don't have to walk through life as just dour people and sour expressions. Nobody is attracted to the cause of Christ because of your frown. Jesus was the happiest person around. That's why people loved him. They were drawn to him. They loved being around him. And so we got to kind of work on the discipline of celebration. You know, there was a Christian psychologist, and here's the connection, because we talked about this at the very beginning. There is a, because thoughtful people are saying, how can I be so joyful in a world of so much sorrow and pain? We're all going to die, Bob. How can I be celebrating about that? And here's the interesting thing about the Bible. There is a strong connection between joy and suffering. Between joy and suffering. You know, David Myers is a Christian psychologist, and he's done some studies, and he shows that the most unhappy, joyless people are the ones, strong correlation, that are the most self-preoccupied. Always thinking about themselves and what's going wrong in their life. And that actually the most joyful people are the ones that are the most giving of their time, of their resources, of their thoughts. They think about other people. I mean, Mother Teresa was actually known as a very joyful person, and she's working with people whose limbs are falling off with leprosy. Can any of y'all really think about Mother Teresa going around in the congested traffic of India and flipping somebody off? I mean, does that make sense? It's kind of a disconnect. No, Mother Teresa didn't do that. She's at her core a very happy and joyful being. How can you be happy and joyful in the midst of such suffering? And this is where, and God says, there's a way to do it. And here's how we're going to do it. This is the day that the Lord has made. There's going to be something about this, and we're going to come to it in just a little bit. But first thing I want to draw to your attention is, if you really want to work on being the joyful person and letting the joy of Jesus out of you, working out your salvation, letting that joy just kind of work out of you, the salvation that God's put in you by himself with no help from you, just put it in you. How do you work that out? Well, start now. This is a day. Notice there's no qualifiers in this statement at all. It doesn't say, this is a day that nothing's going wrong, the cotton's high, mama's good looking, so start being happy. It says, it doesn't say anything about the condition at all. This is a day, right now, no matter what's going on in your life, this is a day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. Over the past several months, we've been studying the Old Testament minor prophets, and Brother Coy has done a great job of bringing out some of the efforts of this phrase called the day of the Lord. And it's always that phrase, the day of the Lord, is talking about the day that Jesus came. And this passage actually connects that day of the Lord to all the days that exist now. This day, right now, this moment. You are invited to rejoice in every moment of life, because every moment of life is a gift. About 10 years ago, there was a doctor that came down with cancer. And his name was Chuck, and he's actually an Atlanta doctor too. I read an article about this. Chuck came down with cancer. The levels were bad, and he knew as a doctor what inevitably would happen as far as the hair loss, because he was going to have to undergo chemotherapy. And so what he decided to do was he was going to shave his hair. He shaved his hair off, put a little sticky glue up there, and threw glitter dust up there, wrapped a towel around his neck, and announced to his kids, I am heretofore to be called Chemo Man. And he said, And he's just a joyful guy. And he said, you know, it helped them deal with the problems, and having kind of a joyful and bringing joy into the situation, into the equation, really helped them deal with the problem that we were facing at the time. The end of the story was he had successful treatment, but he didn't know that because after the last test, the doctors called back that had tested it, and they gave him the lab results, and the lab results indicated that the cancer indicators were back and they were higher than normal, and he knew that this was just a death sentence. And the next morning, he got the phone call saying, "We actually read the wrong results. That's from somebody else who's not been through treatment yet. But your results, there's no cancer whatsoever." And he wrote, "I just wept and I just thank God because I have my life back. I get to see my kids grow up. I get to see my grandkids. I get to go kayaking and hiking and all the things that I wanted to do." And he said, "You know, all those other little problems in my world, they all just pale. They just shrank to absolute insignificance. All little things that used to disturb me, I just taken in context, just were nothing and just the whisper of nothing. Because I really came to realize and experience in a way that few people do that life really, 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 really is a gift. Each moment, every time, every tick of the clock is a gift from God. Every day is a Dida day. And every day is a gift because God said to the Son, 'Do it again.' And the Son did it again." And so we kind of have this defiant nevertheless. That's a phrase that Karl Barth says. He says, you know, joy is a defiant nevertheless, despite the circumstances. I can say nevertheless. And we can approach life even in the worst of circumstances. Monday. Let me tell you how it worked in my own life, you know. Monday. And I've had lots of interactions, but, you know, I've been thinking about this sermon ever since last week. It's been kind of Monday. Monday, I'm at work and the phone rings and it's Maria. And Maria says, "John, the brake lights are all flashing. The ABS lights are flashing. The wheel light is on and I'm hearing a horrible, horrible grinding sound on the right side of the van." And here's what I heard, because when you're a father of four kids, life can be a struggle sometimes. With one in college. Here's what I heard. $1,000 expenditure. $1,000, maybe more. Maybe $2,000. And here's what my body did. Oh, my word. I got to juggle again. How am I going to make this work? And all of a sudden, it's like, okay, hold on a second. Literally, this is the day the Lord has made. Oh, okay. It'll be all right. I know it'll be all right. Intellectually in my mind, I know it'll be all right. I know. I know it. Why am I getting so stressed out? Now, 20 years ago, something like that had happened. It would have ruined that day until I'd gotten past a week from Thursday. But now, all of a sudden, I just, with just like thinking about scripture, I didn't have to wait till a week from Thursday. I relaxed, and you know what? I had one of the best days I've had in a long, long time. It was actually really quite good, and God just blessed me here and there, and I saw him in so many different situations I would not have seen him present in. Oh, he would have been there, but I wouldn't have seen him present. And I've been doing this, and this week, it's just been one of the things. I start my day out. This is the day the Lord has made. When somebody comes up and something happens, it gets on my last nerve, this is the day that the Lord has made. Now, I'm not perfect. But man, it has helped out quite a bit. So how do we do this, man? How do we, when struggle and strife and that whole "this is the day," what is the power in that phrase, "this is the day"? Now, in order to get there, I want to tell y'all a story. True story. It was written by a pastor by the name of Robert Fulghum. And it's a story about, it's a little dicey, but I'm trusting you can handle it. I mean, because you Camp Creek, you know. It was, yeah. It's a story of a wedding. And there's one particular party in a wedding that's just out of control. And y'all know who I'm talking about, right? Mother of the bride. This is a story the mother of the bride writes, Mr. Fulghum. Usually a polite, quiet person, this mother became mentally unhinged by the news of her daughter's engagement. This would be a royal wedding fit for a princess bride. The pastor met twice with the couple. The mother of the bride called weekly. An 18-piece brass and wind ensemble was engaged. Not only were the bridesmaids' outfits made to order, but the tuxedos for the groom and his men were bought. Not rented, mind you, bought. The rehearsal and the dinner the night before was unlike anything that took place in Napoleon's camp the night before Waterloo. Nobody would ever forget this wedding, just as nobody ever forgot Waterloo. Man, it turned out for similar reasons. Guests in formal attire packed the sanctuary. The mighty mother of the bride coasted down the aisle with the grandeur of an opera diva at the premiere at a premiere performance. She had done it. The music softened. Nine chiffon-draped bridesmaids walked lockstep down the aisle, and the wedding march began. Ah, the bride. Left alone with her father in the reception hall of the church while the march of the maidens went on, she had walked along the tables and sampled first pink and green mints, then the cheese balls, then a handful of glazed almonds. She followed that with a couple of shrimp wrapped in bacon, cracker piled high with liver pate. She washed it all down with a glass of pink champagne. And when the bride came down the aisle, it wasn't her dress, but it was her face that caught everyone's attention. For what was approaching was like a live grenade with the pin pulled. The bride threw up, and by threw up, I don't mean a polite little lady like erp into her handkerchief. She puked. There's no word for it that's nice. I mean, she hosed the front of the chancel, hitting two bridesmaids, the groom, a ring bearer, and me. We have it all on videotape. Three of them. The mother of the bride had thought of everything. The mother of the bride fainted. Only two people were seen smiling. One was the mother of the groom. Well, one was the father of the bride. It ends well, though. Guests were invited to the fellowship hall. The bride was consoled, cleaned up, and fitted out with a bridesmaid dress. The cast was reassembled with a single flute that played a quiet air, and the words were spoken and the deed was done. Everybody cried as the groom held the bride through the whole ceremony, and no groom ever kissed a bride more tenderly than he. This is not the end of the story. On the 10th anniversary of the disaster, a party was held. Three TV sets were set up, and best friends were invited. The event was hysterical. As for the mother of the bride, Fulgham writes, she's a lot looser these days. She not only forgave her husband and everybody else for their part in the debacle, she forgave herself. And nobody laughed harder at the video than she. And there's a word for what she has, grace. How could something that went so wrong end so well? It's because at the end of the day, the groom got the bride. This is the day that the Lord has made. This day right here, the groom gets the bride. You know, one day this man Jesus, who was the most joyful person the world has ever known, this man Jesus went to the cross, and amazingly enough, we are told that he went to the cross for the joy that was set before him. No one has loved you more than Jesus Christ has loved you. Not your mama, not your daddy, not your children, not your brothers, not your sisters. No one loves you more than Jesus. That joy with him eternally is coming without sorrow one day. He endured the cross, was scorned and shamed, was buried in the tomb, and everybody thought that all that joy was buried along with him. But on the third day after Jesus was buried, God said to the Son, "Do it again." And he said to the stone, "Roll away." And he said to Jesus, "Get up." And Jesus got up and did a little dance. And it was a D-Day day. And every day since then has been a D-Day day. Now, I don't know what's going on in your life.
I know a lot of you have a lot of pain going on. Some of it's been expressed today, but a whole bunch of it has not. I want to leave you with these words from Isaiah chapter 55, verse 12. The words of the prophet who is trying to express what no words could ever express. You shall go out in joy and be led forth with peace. And the mountains and the hills will break forth before you, and all the trees in the field will clap their hands, and God himself will go with his people, and he will wipe every tear from their eyes, and death and mourning and pain will be no more. And then will dawn that Didah day that will never end. That's the God that we serve.